Discussion keeps the world turning.
This is Roundtable.
You're listening to Roundtable with myself, He Young. I'm joined by Xing Yu in the studio and Josh Cotterell on the line. Coming up, move over, Blackjack. There's a new card craze taking off in China, Guandan. The Chinese card game is all about teamwork, strategy, and a whole lot of social lubrication. We take a look at how it's redefining social gaming with its blend of tradition and excitement, offering players a fun experience that goes beyond just the cards. And we share with you what's brought us sheer joy this week. Join us for a dose of positivity, laughter, and all things that make our hearts sing in Roundtable's Happy Place. Life happens, we get it. Miss the juicy bits on air? No worries, dive into the Roundtable podcast for the discussion and insights. Find us on your favorite platform and let the fun catch up with you. And if you have any questions, thoughts, anything you want to share with us, please send your voice memo, we'd really appreciate it, to ezfmroundtable@foxmail.com. Let's turn your thoughts into on-air magic. Now on Roundtable, as we move on to today's second topic of discussion, let's step into the world of Guandan, where strategy meets socializing in a whirlwind of card-throwing excitement. This traditional card game has experienced a sudden surge in popularity in recent months, heralded as a means to mingle with China's business elite. It offers a refreshing break from the boardroom, fostering connections and camaraderie over tea and tactical maneuvers, turning post-dinner gatherings into important bounding sessions. So let's talk about the game first. I have to admit, never played it before, but I've seen it all over social media. So tell us, how does it work?
Yeah.
The best to your ability, my friend. To you.
Yeah, because to be honest, I haven't played it either. So Guandan, literally meaning throwing eggs. It's a traditional Chinese card game that originated from Huai'an in Jiangsu province in eastern part of China in the 1960s. So it's a trick-taking game, I think similar to what people in the West may know as bridge. And the game is typically played with two decks of cards by four players sitting around a table, and they form two teams, and the players race to throw down increasingly high combination of cards, and the one who empties his or her hands first wins.
Ah.
It's a teamwork. So the object of Guandan is to work with a partner to ensure that one of you in the team plays all your cards before either of your opponents do, and the play then continues among the remaining participants. So the game involves strategy, memory, and careful observation of the cards played by the other players. And it has grown to be one of the most popular card games in China.
Thank you very much for that, Xing Yu. But I have to admit, that just sounds like any other card game to me. Maybe because I don't really play poker. Josh, tell us your immediate reaction after learning about this card game called Guandan, as well as maybe offer us a comparison with other card games that you're familiar with.
Sure. Well, to answer your first question, I think my immediate reaction is that it makes a lot of sense. I think that having a game like this really makes a lot of sense in the sort of business context, especially when it comes to networking, right? I think that any kind of game, not just Guandan, but any kind of game that can allow people to spend pretty extended periods of time together, right? And to give them some sort of light stimulus, I guess maybe it's not always light, sometimes it can be quite competitive, right? But enough stimulus to have them sat there for usually quite a long time to be able to talk to people, right? I think these kind of games offer the opportunity, for example, maybe if you're not playing that hand, right, or something like that, there's going to be other people at the table that you can discuss with. So I think that it makes a lot of sense. And in the Western world, there are also a lot of similar games like this, games like Bridge, which I know is also quite popular in China, but this is also quite a popular game amongst business people. Kind of similar to Guandan, actually, but I'll tell you about some of the differences in a moment. Poker also has always long been synonymous with business and money, right? Obviously, poker, usually there's some gambling involved, but still it has a really significant presence in the business world. Also, I know it's really different, but I think Some sports like golf, I know that this couldn't be further away from Guandan, but in its ability to allow people to socialize and network, I think there are some similarities to be drawn. But you asked me about blackjack, so I will tell you about some of the major differences. There are a lot of differences between Guandan and blackjack. The gameplay mechanics, of course, Guandan, and I didn't know this from memory, but I've learned that it involves four players forming two teams, whereas blackjack typically is an individual player game. Right? So it's more of a team sport. Also, there are some cultural contexts and nuances to Guandan. Guandan has more of a significance in Asia, China, especially with roots dating back to the 1960s in Jiangsu province. And, you know, it's more than just the gameplay. It also encompasses social bonding and some traditional values that are more Chinese than, for example, blackjack. Blackjack is traditionally very competitive and emphasizes sort of individualism more than like team play. So there's a big difference there culturally, I think. Also, accessibility and adaptability. Guandan is relatively simple, and so it makes it quite accessible. I guess that doesn't necessarily mean that it's easy to win, but it means that you can start playing the game quite quickly. I personally think that blackjack is equally easy. I think blackjack maybe just takes 5 to 10 minutes to sort of know what's going on. Again, not to play well, but within sort of 10 minutes, you can sit down and start playing blackjack, actually. So I think that maybe there's some similarities here. But I think mainly there it's more about the cultural significance and team play. There are some differences here.
Yeah, and I heard from friends who actually play Guandan. They say that it's not that competitive. It's more about, okay, let's...
Bonding.
Yeah, having a good time and collaboration. Those kind of things. And I think that is exactly the kind of spirit you want to forge with potential business partners or people who you want to have a good relationship with. And you don't want to really be at loggerheads so much. Like, I have to win. The competitive spirit, I think, lies in the belly of every person. It's just how to get the genie out of the bottle kind of thing. But with Guandan, it sounds like it sets you in the right kind of mood and in a social setting. And I can see why in these gatherings it be a really fun thing to get people to be interested in one common theme, and let's start socializing, make friends, and see what can come out of it.
Yeah, and I am also very astonished by its popularity. You know, the latest data has it that around 140 million people actually in China play the game. So that's a huge number of the game players. And also, we are seeing some of the associations established, particularly for this card game. Like in Shanghai, we have this Guandan Sports Association, which was established recently. And the chairman is also a very successful businessman. And we have also seen associations of this poker game in provinces like Guizhou, Jiangsu, and Hainan. So it's mostly popular in the eastern and western part of the country. And also in recent years, it has gained popularity in these financial and banking circles. So it really serves as a way to share information while you're playing the game with probably your business partners and some of your colleagues, and to break the ice. And not just these business circles, we are seeing an increasing number of people embracing this card game, and it's spreading beyond that base of business community.
I guess that social media, I think, helps a little bit. And I know that Guandan isn't sort of like a buzzword necessarily, like on social media right now, but I think that it helps definitely to post these things. And it's quite easy to create a buzz around something like this because of that. This kind of happened with Bridge, actually. And it can happen for several reasons, I guess. Guandan, maybe you guys can tell me more about this. But I know, for example, Bridge, quite interestingly, Bridge became popular for some reasons because some celebrities started playing it. It's also a team game, actually, Bridge, similar to Guandan like that. And I also know that there is, when I was learning Chinese, that there was a program which I watched to help improve my Chinese. Not my favorite show, right? And you probably think it's hilarious when you know that I was watching this, but I think the translation, I think it was originally a Japanese show and it's been remade like a million times. It's called like Meteor Garden or something. It's terrible.
Hold on.
流星花园.
You mean the idol show? Oh, wow.
Well, it's a drama.
Yes, sorry. Drama.
Yeah, but there's some idols in it.
Yeah. F4?
And they play bridge in it.
Hold on, F4?
I don't know.
You know,
I don't know which version I watched, you see.
Four guys.
There are four guys, right? Who are supposed to be really hot.
Yeah.
Okay, got it. But how is this related to Guandan?
because in it, they play bridge.
Oh,
And they're really good at bridge. And this, I read that this, you know, made more people want to play bridge. So
this is the
connection that I'm making here. So I don't know, has any famous celebrity started playing Guandan recently?
I don't think so, not to my knowledge.
Yeah,
but this is a buzzword on social media. And at first, I didn't even know what these two Chinese characters stand for together when they're placed in juxtaposition to each other. And I thought, it must have something to do with eggs. And I'm not interested in that at all. But then I just saw it like all over the place. And it seems like there's definitely some kind of invisible hand of a push for this kind of card games. And maybe because it is accessible and easy to play, and a lot of people are happy to try something new there.
Yeah, and also, like we've talked a lot about it, it's about socializing, networking, it's entertaining, and it requires strategic thinking, cooperation.
Xinyu, this reminds me of another very social-oriented pastime of the Chinese people, which is mahjong. Of course, you know, the game mechanics are different. You know, playing mahjong, it comes in the form of tiles, and this is cards. But I used to think that playing mahjong is a really good way to socialize in certain circles. But it's interesting. Like, for example, traditionally, mahjong is not really played that often in Beijing, but it is hugely popular in a lot of parts of China. But anyhow, so I checked with some people interested in Guandan. I was like, why not you play mahjong? And not all of them know how to do it. But then they said, well, if it's under certain social settings, playing mahjong is just evokes a different kind of connotation. And then it is Guandan, which is like this new card game that you can try your luck with, and it's just more socially fitting. And I just find that to be fascinating. Apparently, maybe some people associate playing mahjong with friends, but like in Chengdu, like people play mahjong out in the open with neighbors, strangers, whoever who's willing to sit down and form a gang of four and then do it. So it's also really interesting to see like how the social scenario sort of fits with this particular card game or pastime that people enjoy. Also, when we talk about the sudden popularity, as it feels, of this particular pastime called Guandan, some people say it's thanks to having associations, having a lot of the spotlight that goes to it, but also it's brewed its own industry or business to a certain extent. Tell us about the different ways that people are making an extra buck revolving around Guandan.
Yeah, definitely. So we have seen a growing number of demanding Guandan specific tables and also offline venues and rooms, especially designed for people to play the game. And also, I have noticed one of this interesting example is Guandan tea. You know, when people play the game, they oftentimes they drink tea. So some business operators, they have made this particular Guandan tea, which has become a necessity when you guys enjoying this game together. And some of the business, they have made advertisement on these Guandan cards so that this serves as a way to promote your company or brand while they're playing out the card. And also what's interesting is that in the birthplace of Guandan in Huai'an, local cultural and tourism department, they're also trying to integrate the game into its tourism from 2019. So they are allowing more tourists to come to visit the place. And while during their stay, they can also play the game a little bit and get to know about this traditional card game.
That sounds fun. And also you just have to give it to the business acumen of those folks who can always find an opportunity in everything, it seems. Coming up next, welcome to the happiest corner of the airwaves, Roundtable's Happy Place.
Delivery, delivery, delivery.
What is it?
Happiness from Roundtable.
Josh, what do you have for us in this week's Happy Place?
Well, my happy place is about something seemingly quite dull and inanimate, but it's given me great happiness, and I really encourage those who do not value this item to think carefully about it, because it could really change your life. There is a phrase that one should invest in things that distance you from the earth. Things like a good pair of shoes, right? A nice carpet, a good chair, right? These things are important. And the reason for that is because they support you, right? One thing that supports you for the longest amount of time is the mattress on top of your bed, right? Now, the reason this has given me a lot of happiness especially is because I have something to compare it to, and my comparative base is very low. And what I mean by that is that I have never cared for or even thought about the quality of my mattress my whole life. I'm almost 30 years old, and I've lived away from home for a long time now, and I've always just slept on the mattress that was in my apartment, usually a pretty rough, grotty apartment when I was a student, right? And then even when I managed to get a job, and I probably could afford a mattress, I never got one. Now, I have been lucky enough to recently move apartments, and I have acquired a good mattress. And I cannot express to you how much better it has made my sleep, how much more it makes me look forward to going to sleep, the pressure relief for my back. I'm quite a tall person, and you know, I'm always working on my computer. And I do hunch over too much, and I've got lower back problems. It hurts all the time, but the relief that it gives me when I lay down now is incredible. So yeah, this is my happy place. Again, sounds a bit boring, but I really would encourage anybody that maybe struggles with sleep or has some back issues or just has maybe not a great mattress to consider, if you can afford it, to maybe invest in this.
I wonder, this new mattress really improved your sleep?
Yes, it has in many ways. And I didn't realize until I got a good one how valuable it is. It's definitely not the only factor that helps me sleep. And sometimes I still cannot get to sleep. You know, my new mattress hasn't stopped me having to deal with work troubles and things like this, but it definitely gives me some welcome relief from said troubles. And I think that it has improved my health. But yeah, especially with like spinal alignment. So yeah. It definitely has helped a lot with sleep.
Interesting.
This is like World Sleep Day, how to get you sound asleep part two, you know. And yeah, for those interested who could check yesterday's show as well, and today you get the Happy Place part two. And Josh, have you heard of those, are they called foam bed mattresses? You know, they're high...
Like memory foam.
Yes, memory foam. And supposedly they, you know, when your bed can remember the shape or is molded by the shape of your body, and it supposedly helps people to fall asleep. It's all about comfort, I guess. So whatever works. Yeah.
Mine is like part memory foam.
Oh, lovely.
It's got like a layer of it on it. So I have the best of both worlds.
Oh, lovely. I'm glad. I'm happy for you.
Yeah. So a good mattress really matters. And for me, I think I am not that picky about mattress, but when I go to a new place and when I have to stay in a hotel or a homestay in, the thing that really troubles my sleep is the pillow. I think sometimes I would be not so used to that, the new pillow that I am lying my head on. So that's the key factor that's affecting my sleep, I guess. And for my happy place, because it's the spring season, and when in spring, we have a lot of fresh produce. So for this week, I have brought my favorite fruit during the past winter and also this spring. It's called pa pa gan. It's a mandarin orange, and that's gained great popularity recently on social media. I don't know if Josh, you've tried this pa pa gan.
No, I haven't.
You should definitely try it. And it's becoming the new darling of the fruit world in China. It looks like mandarin orange, but it's usually bigger in size and it has thicker peel. So it's easier to peel them than orange or grapefruit, and it's sweeter than tangerine, and it's almost seedless, and it's juicy and sweet. So the official name of this papagan is called Chunjian. So it's a romantic Chinese name, literally meaning meet in spring.
So that's not the company name of the...
No, it's not the company
The plantation?
Name. It's the fruit. name is called
Chunjian.
Yeah, and on Chinese social media platform Weibo, there is a hashtag that has gained over 140 million views. It's called Papagan, a kind fruit. So they're saying Papagan is kind because one of the netizens commented that the world is complicated, but Papagan is simple. It's easy to peel and it's low in calories. It's abundant in juice and its sweet taste can accommodate most people's palates. So I also want to say how much I love this fruit. I can eat 3 or 4 of them at once and eat them probably every day. Yeah. But actually, the right season for this particular fruit typically starts around the Spring Festival and it ends till April. So it's the right season to savor it. And this fruit is a hybrid and it was introduced to China in the late 1990s. And since then, it has been cultivated in various places across China. But Sichuan province in southwestern part of the country is currently the largest producer of this fruit.
Don't you find it to be kind of interesting why there's this sudden explosion of perceived popularity on social media? Because I remember consuming this fruit, which I also enjoy, for a few years.
Yeah,
but now it seems like Papagan is having a moment. And also, it's interesting the way you pronounce it, because maybe I've gotten it wrong all the time. I used to call it Papagan. And then there's another way to say it, which refers to Ba. So
Papagan.
So that would be the third tone of the word, which also kind of sounds very similar to something a bit unsavory in this occasion that associates with feces. Yeah, now I guess I know the correct pronunciation from you, Xingyu, and thanks for that. Who knows what you learn on this show?
Yeah, it's interesting that I was mispronouncing it too before.
Oh, okay.
And then because it became trending on social media, and then I started to learn about this, the correct pronunciation of this fruit.
Yeah.
And some people say this fruit deserves the reputation of the fruit king or something in China, because
durian is not happy.
In the past, we have the durians, we have cherries, they are having this moment, or even strawberries, but Papagan definitely, it deserves it.
Awesome. And also, it's so easy to eat the fruit, to get the peel off, because there's this, in between the peel and the flesh, there's this really airy space in between.
Mm-hmm.
Although there's like little bits of pith connecting the two the two parts, but it's just easier to peel than orange, for example. All right, thank you very much for introducing your favorite and most popular fruit of the moment, Xingyu. Get in, kids. We're headed back to Spice World. Dune Part 2 is my happy place. Denis Villeneuve's sweeping, soaring space epic stars Timothée Chalamet and Zendaya is here, and it delivers plenty of spaceships and big explosions like any good sci-fi blockbuster should, but the movie also tackles themes of rebellion, religion, and the use of abuse of political power, and these things are very intriguing to watch. And I have 3 pointers here to recommend that you should go see this movie, or at least consider it, okay? Number 1, what I really enjoyed of this movie is the ambitious filmmaking and stunning visuals. Cinematographer Greg Fraser's work is highlighted for its stunning use of color, light, and tactile grounding of the desert environments, and the scale and scope of filmmaking is described as capturing the full sweep of Frank Herbert's epic saga. It is a visually dazzling and technically impressive spectacle, and the production cost stands at a whopping $190 million or 1.4 billion yuan. And this level of production is simply not something you get from the cinema every day or in every country. So you are in for an incredible visual journey. And I think these days we don't get these kind of cinematic experiences that often anymore. With this, you can tell, oh, it's money well spent. Because nowadays, and especially after the pandemic and everything, we're so used to streaming shows at home, and you might have a huge screen at home. Why not just watch the movie or the drama series or whatnot at home? But this one, it gives you a reason to actually go see it in IMAX. And if you're an action film junkie, congratulations. We've got dope choreography in some of these fight scenes that are so amazing. And the pacing is great. You will be at the edge of your seats and you want to know what happens next. And that's point one. Point two is the nuanced exploration of themes and characters that you don't often come by in movies these days. Dune Part 2 presents a really complex portrayal of political manipulation and rebellion, challenging traditional tropes and exploring the dangers of power, fanaticism, and the exploration of marginalized groups. And the film delves deeper into the moral ambiguity of the main character, Paul's journey as a messiah figure. And then the film also questions whether his actions are truly heroic or manipulative. And the film's exploration of all these themes set it apart from a more straightforward hero's journey narrative. And also it provides more agency and complexity to the female characters as well, like Lady Jessica and Chani. And their relationships are really interesting here. I'm so glad to see in this sequel of this movie franchise, both characters have so much more room for development, and the acting is superb. And here's my last point, all right? I've made this argument that Hollywood has been creatively bankrupt for some time. See the whole bunch of superhero franchises, but Dune 2 could possibly be a signal of a resurgence in creativity. And this is largely due to the film's diverse and talented international cast and crew, which departs from the traditional Hollywood mold. Well, director Denis Villeneuve is a French-Canadian filmmaker known for his visually stunning and thematically complex works, and the film's lead actor, Timothée Chalamet, is a French-American rising star, and Javier Bardem is a renowned Spanish actor, and Rebecca Ferguson, oh, she's absolutely breathtaking, and she's from Sweden. And I haven't even gotten to the part of the crew, which is very international as well. So if you excel at drawing diverse top talent from different countries and cultures together, fostering an environment where the best from all over the world voluntarily converge to innovate, create, and take things to the next level beyond imagination, that's how some pretty amazing things can be achieved. And that is my happy place. And that brings us to the end of today's roundtable. Thank you, Xing Yu and Josh Cotterell, for joining the discussion. I'm He Young. We'll see you next time.